Welcome to Soul Talk, soulful conversations exploring who you are, why you're here, and how to live your most authentic life. My name is Coop Blackson, nationally best-selling author of You Are the One, transformational teacher, and your host. I invite you to subscribe to the Soul Talk podcast for weekly inspiration from me, where I will share with you some powerful ideas, thoughts, and practical life wisdom to help you live life more fully, freeing yourself from your past, reclaiming your power, and living your true life's purpose. You can also go to www.coopblackson.com, enter your name and email to download my free 2-part video training series and learn the ultimate secrets to happiness and fulfillment. Let's get started with Soul Talk. This week's episode of the Soul Talk podcast is going to be a very special episode. Consider this week's episode a bonus. About 2 years ago, I put together an incredible life-changing online summit. We had almost 10,000 people join this live summit over the course of 7 days. It was called the Surrender Summit, and it was truly legendary. I brought together many of my friends like John Gray, Barbara DeAngelis, Dr. Sue Mortar. I brought together so many people from different disciplines to talk about life, love, money, wealth, relationships. One of my favorite guests, someone that's inspired me for many, many years, was someone that you probably have heard of. Maybe you've read his books. His name is the one and only Neil Donald Walsh, the author of Conversations with God. The Conversations with God book series has truly transformed the lives and inspired the lives of millions of people around the world. And so in this week's episode of Soul Talk, what I wanted to do is, that interview was so powerful and challenging and thought-provoking in so many ways that I wanted each one of you in the public sphere, I wanted you to have access to listen to Neil Donald Walsh's thoughts around surrender. It's powerful. It's thought-provoking. It might challenge many of your assumptions on life, living, relationships, spirituality. But I promise you, if you listen to the end, trust me, you will experience breakthroughs. And so, folks, welcome to another episode of Soul Talk. Make sure you share this episode with everybody in your life that you love. If you really love the Soul Talk podcast episodes, do me a favor. Please write a review on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen. Enjoy today's episode. Let me know your thoughts. Here we go. Welcome back, folks. Welcome back to a very, very special session of the Surrender Summit. I trust that you have been enjoying, you've been having fun, you've been applying all of the amazing insights and information that so many of the teachers have been generously sharing with you. Hopefully you've been having some beautiful and unexpected breakthroughs in your life. The Surrender Summit is really designed to inspire you to live surrender more fully in your life and see and harness the power of surrender to live in alignment with your destiny, to manifest your soul's purpose at a higher level. I'm very excited about today's session. I get to spend some time and share with you someone who's been a real inspiration in my life. I'm sure you know of him. You perhaps have read his books, the author of the Conversations with God series, the amazing Neil Donald Walsh. Neil, welcome to the Surrender Summit.
Thank you. I don't know how amazing I am. I would call myself a pretty unamazing person, the regular, normal, natural person who's unamazing in every way. But it was nice of you to call me that. So you begin the program with an outright lie. How can you believe this man if he lies right to your face?
Well, I think you're amazing.
Well, that's very sweet. I'm just having fun with you. That's a very sweet thing to say.
So we're talking about surrender and the theme of surrender, the topic of surrender. I think in our culture today, there's different definitions of surrender and misconceptions around surrender. And I would love to explore this with you. And so when I say the word surrender, I'm curious, what comes up for you? What do you mean? What's your understanding of surrender that you can share with us?
It's something that I should never do. I'm never going to surrender to you or anybody else. I'm going to fight till the last minute, and I'm going to make sure that surrender is never a part of my reality. Don't even discuss it with me, because there's no reason to surrender to anybody. You should just stick up for yourself and punch anybody in the nose who gives you a hard time. And don't even, oh, wait a minute, just a second. Hang on just a minute. Getting a call here. It's God. Yeah, what? All right, whatever. He said, stop the humor and answer the question honestly. Whatever. Okay. Surrender to me means letting go of, releasing, I almost want to use a strong word, abandoning. Almost every old notion that I ever had about who I am, about the real purpose of life, especially about why things are happening the way they're happening, and also to surrender, for me at least, all of the old ideas that I had in my life about God. It means just stepping away from and letting myself separate myself from those old ideas and see if there might not be something that I could more fully understand. You know, my friend, I've spent most of my life, I'm an older person now, I'm going to be 80 soon. I spent most of my life, most of my adult life, feeling like I had answers, you know, to the really important questions. I wasn't arrogant enough to think that I knew everything, but, you know, the important questions about my life and what I should be doing next and why I'm doing what I'm doing and why things are happening, all those questions. I thought I really had pretty much of a handle on that. Except when I got to the age of 50, I realized that not much in my life that was really important to me was working the way I had hoped that it would. And then I realized, my gosh, I'm 50 years old. I've been here a half century now, and I can't seem to get it together. What's going on? And I realized that in my own life, I can't speak for anybody else, but in my own life, I was carrying forward from my younger years many ideas and notions that I had about life and about God. And I had to look at those very carefully. Then I had my conversation with God, the experience that I called conversations with God. And I realized, oh, I see, just about nothing that I really thought I understood about myself, about who I am, about why I'm here on the earth, and about life itself. Gosh, just about nothing that I thought was true turns out to be true. So for me, that was a big act of surrender, which was giving up and stepping away from what I thought I understood about all those things. And also I had to surrender my need to be so serious about everything. So I want to make a joke of everything you say and don't expect me to come off as a serious person.
You're pretty funny. Why is surrender so hard? Why does it feel so hard sometimes?
You know, because I tell you, again, I can't talk for the human race, but I can talk for myself.
Yeah.
So many of the things that I had to let go of were things that I heard from the authority figures in my life I most respected. So it felt like an act of disrespect, like to my parents or to my grandparents or to my culture, to my traditions, even in a sense to my old religion and so forth. So for me, it was hard to let go because it was like saying, no, you're wrong about that to people who I've held as the highest authorities in my life. And it's not easy to, at least it wasn't easy for me. It wasn't easy for me to think that, gosh, you know, some of the more impacting things that my parents told me in my life turned out to be not true. And what I was told by my religion, which I held very close to me as a younger person, turned out to be, at least in my experience, not true. So why is it difficult? Well, it was difficult for me because it was like, you know, disagreeing with making my own parents wrong, making my own family, my own family wrong. And I didn't want to think that they were wrong. I didn't want to disrespect them. So I hung on to my beliefs. By the way, not just my spiritual beliefs, even my political beliefs, and even certain beliefs that I held about larger aspects of life. You know, I was just told some things by my father that were just plain not true.
Can you share what kind of things you were told?
They're very... this is going to be very difficult for me to say. But when I was a younger boy, 9 years old, 10 years old, my dad had taken us to the zoo. And I was going to the zoo, and my dad had bought me some cotton candy. And I was eating the cotton candy, and I was, you know, excited to be there at the zoo with my dad. And a man was coming down the pathway at the zoo toward me. He was a black man. And I was just so full of life and so full of myself. And so I said to him, "Hey, mister, would you like to have some of my cotton candy?" And I was just excited to see him. He was happy to be there. My dad pulled me away. He said, don't talk to that man. I said, okay. And my dad's pulling me by my arm. And I'm like, okay, what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? And he said to me, "That's trash." Mm. You know, I'm embarrassed to say, because it was the highest authority in my life.
Right.
I'm embarrassed to say that I held on to that idea for years until I finally came to my own conclusion that, oh, my dad was wrong about that. Completely wrong about that. And my dad had some ideas about women as well. Not really horrible ideas, you know, but he thought that they shouldn't, that they weren't as smart as men, that they shouldn't get paid the same as men, that they shouldn't hold positions of authority. You know, they should just be, you know, take care of the house, take care of the kids. And again, it took me years to let go of my idea about that. It wasn't, you know, because it came from the highest authority in my life and my religion in school. My dad sent us to a Catholic school. And my religion taught me some things about God, that God is judgmental, condemning and punishing if I don't do what God needs me to do. And it took me many years, not 10 or 15, but 30 or 40 years to let go of some of those ideas about God and what God wants. So you asked me to give you specific examples. Wow, the ideas I was given about people of different races, people of different genders, people of different religions, and about God itself. Most of those ideas were ideas that I had to let go of if I really wanted to live a life that made sense to my soul.
How do we let go? Because let's say there's ideas that we have about ourselves, I'm not enough, or another race, you know, trash, or God. Sometimes we know that these ideas are limiting, or we start seeing them, but they can feel so ingrained. And so is there a process, or how did you let go of some of these ideas?
Well, there are two ways. Number one, I began to look at what was working and what was not working in my life.
Okay.
You know, and I had an interesting experience when I was about 23, I guess I was 26, about 26 years old. I was in the broadcasting industry, and I was hired. I was interviewed by a radio station in Baltimore that was an ethnic radio station. Everybody on the air was black. Hmm. I was interviewed to be the program director of this radio station, because I had had at that point about 8 or 9 years experience. Believe it or not, I started in radio when I was 18. Wow. So I had 8 years experience in broadcasting, and they were looking for someone to kind of take over that position. But so my daily experience with these guys, they're fabulous guys, talent coming out of their ears, brilliant and incredible guys, but not just brilliant and incredible, just nice human beings. We'd go out and have lunch together, and I got to be, you know, social, because my life didn't put me in situations when I got to be very social with people of any other race, really, Asian, Black, Mexican, no other race. I was just, you know, really secluded in my own culture. Mm. Now, here I am socializing, going to parties, going to their homes, having lunch with these people. And I thought, gosh, these are really, really nice people. I want to be, I even said to one of them, I said, could I be a close friend of yours? He said, well, sure. I thought we were good friends. I said, well, we're good friends, but I want to be a really close friend. Could I be a close friend of yours? And he said, absolutely. Why would you even ask me a question like that? I said, because maybe I thought you didn't want to be a close friend of yours because I wasn't the same race. And he said, whoa, man, brother, are you living in the past? So, you know, and that woke me up. It was like a slap, you know, a metaphorical slap across the face. Right. And I just woke up and thought, well, I guess I really am. Because I really thought he wouldn't want to get to know me really well. I mean, well enough to, you know, have me over to his house for special events and so forth. But so I learned. I also learned that some women were almost as smart as men. Maybe not quite, but almost. That there are some women who are almost as smart as men and almost deserve to get paid the same salary as men. You're supposed to be laughing and making a joke of this.
I was like, I'm waiting for the punchline. Where's Neil going with this? Where's Neil going with this?
But I think the point I want to make is that as I got older, of course, as luck would have it, and as life would have it, I wound up finding myself in situations where the lie was put to the statements that I was given, to the so-called truths that I was told. And I realized that I was totally misinformed. Totally misinformed, you know, about all of that. And then even about God, I had an out-of-body experience. This is going to get a little fluffy here, forgive me. But I really did have an out-of-body experience. It was like a near-death experience. I wasn't dying, but I had an out-of-body experience in which I believe that I was in the presence of God. Kut, I remember feeling in this experience, oh God, no, I can't be here with you. I can't let you see me. I was so ashamed of who I am, and something you mentioned earlier, that I'm not worthy and I'm not worthy, you know. And my religion taught me to feel that way. I was taught as a child, when I was 8 and 9 years old, to memorize the prayer, Lord, I am not worthy that thou should enter under my roof. I remember being told to memorize that. So before receiving Holy Communion, that I wasn't really worthy to receive Holy Communion, but that God would heal me if I asked him to. So now I'm having this out-of-body experience, and I'm just, my head is down. I can't even look up. I don't even want to. It was just this incredible warm white light, and I was embarrassed. And I remember God saying to me, or what I experienced as God saying to me, sweetheart, I love you completely, totally, and absolutely, without any condition of any kind. Mm. I don't love you if. I love you because you are my beloved creation. And then I was told later in conversations with God, if you saw you the way I see you, you would smile a lot. So my experience, even of God, not just my experience of women or people of other racial cultures, but people, even my experience of God changed so dramatically. that I found myself letting go of and releasing my ideas about all of that. And I thought, you know, at the age of 50, Newt, I'm 50 years old. Not 20, not 30, not 40. I'm half century on the planet. And I'm looking at myself in the mirror and I go,
jeez,
you don't know anything.
Wow.
You've been living a half century with beliefs that have nothing to do with ultimate reality. Huh. Wake up.
Wow.
And thank goodness I was given the chance. I'm now almost 80. So wow. The second half of my life, I was given the chance to live like a person who was awake and not like a person who was still sleepwalking.
What are some of the, well, first, I mean, I think at 50 to question yourself in that way.
Because my life wasn't working. My relationships weren't working. You know, my friend, you know, have you been married?
Not yet. Almost.
Well, I was married once. I was married twice. And I was married three times. I was married four times. And I had this, I was married five times.
Okay, Neil.
This is not a joke. This is the truth. I actually was married six times. No, seven times. I'm now with my seventh wife. Wow. This is not a joke. This is the truth. People who know me will tell you. And because I had one failed relationship after the other.
But can I just ask that, like, why was that? If you look back, what was the source of the cycle of failure in the relationship? I'm just curious.
A lot of things. My dad's message about women.
Okay. Your
place is in the home, your place is to raise the children, blah, blah, blah. You know, my idea about who they are, the reason for all of life, my idea what love was, you know, is told, you know, I have a different idea of what love really is. I've come to understand that God's love, if I want to love people the way God loves me, I'm going to have to accept people and embrace people without needing, requiring, demanding, or expecting anything in return. Because that's how God loves us. But I was told about a God. No, God says, I love you if you do these things and don't do those things. And then I realized that whole notion of God, that God is not loving us conditionally. God loves us if we're Muslim, Catholic, Hindu, Mormon. Yeah, even Mormon. That was a joke. So God loves us no matter, or if we have no religion at all, by the way. Mm. We don't have to. So, and I thought, do I dare believe in these things? Because all these notions were radical. My notions about women, my notions about gays, about straights, about blacks, about conservatives, about, you know, people who, Democrats were okay with me, but Repo, I can't say the word.
Republicans, let me help.
Ooh, dude, don't say that word.
We'll delete it, don't worry.
Okay, he's going to have a heck of a time trying to edit this entire tape.
Yeah, it's going to be a trip.
Or don't edit it, let it be just
one. No, I think we're going to let it be, man. This is going to be fun.
But anyway, to answer your question, I finally got to a place where I was able to let go because, you know, at 50, nothing in my life was working. I mean, I wasn't a happy person. I had a good job. I was okay. I was getting by. I wasn't looking for my next dime. Although you do probably know a little bit of my history, I did wind up living on the street for a year.
Yeah.
I wound up as a street person for a year of my life. And believe me, if your life up to that point hasn't straightened you out.
Wow.
Spend a year on the sidewalk and that'll straighten you out.
What was the biggest shower,
you can't wash your hair, you can't wash your clothes because if you do have a few pennies, you're not going to spend it at the laundromat cleaning your clothes. So you just walk down the street, sleeping on the sidewalk, sleeping on the ground, and you don't know when you wake up in the morning whether you'll be able to have any money to eat that day. It depends on how kind people are when they walk up to you. So I would, you know, approach people smelling the way I smell, my hair, you know, greasy and stringy, my clothes, you know, unkempt. And I would say to people, could you help a person in need? Anything would help. Anything would help. Some guy once gave me, he said, all I got right now is a quarter. I said, hey, you know what? If I got a quarter from everybody, I could get a hamburger at the end of the day. I'll take your quarter if you're willing to give it to me. And so I learned about humility and about graciousness and about who and how many people are. I learned, boy, I call it the college of the sidewalk. And if you think this is easy, I always challenge people, you know, leave your house this Friday afternoon around 4 o'clock. Don't come back till Monday. Spend the entire weekend on the street and take no money with you at all. Not even 10 cents. Take no money with you. Just go out there and come back home around 5 o'clock on Monday and tell me how the weekend went. And then imagine doing that for 52 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And then come, then look me in the eye and tell me you haven't learned anything. Tell me you haven't figured out anything about life and about who you are, because I did. And boy, did I let go of my previous ideas, my preconditioning. I had to let go of all of it. And you know what, Val? Never pass anybody on the street. Always make sure you got a couple of singles, maybe even a five, tucked in your pocket. Have some paper money with you. When you pass somebody on the street, or maybe he's sitting on the ground, leaning up against the building with a little basket in front of him with a sign that says anything helps, don't make a judgment. Don't pass the guy. I don't think he's just going to spend it on drugs or whatever you think he's going to. Just put the $5 bill in his basket. You won't even know at the end of the week you missed it. You won't even miss it. But if you don't put something in his basket, what you will miss is the chance to experience and express who you really are. A person of compassion, a person of clarity, a person of ability, a person of abundance, and a person who is willing to help those in need. That's who you really are. Make sure you don't leave the house without some folding money in your pocket that you can reach for immediately and put in that person's basket. I had a lady say to me once, she's always in front of this restaurant that I went to. She was like a fixture there. For years, she'd be there. And finally, but before I was on this, is long before I was on the street. And I walked up to her and I said, why did she had her hand out? She said, could you help a person? And I said, you know, you're here every day. You're here all the time. It's like your career. Why don't you just go out and get a job? Why do you insist on standing here asking people for money?
Right.
She said, because I'm giving you, if I didn't do that, how would you have a chance to experience who you really are?
Wow.
I went, whoa. Yeah. And so that was, and then who would have thought that later in my own life, I'd be in that position, standing on street corners or in front of shopping centers or wherever I knew a lot of people would be, and trying to see if I could get a dime or a nickel or maybe even a dollar on a good day from a few people.
Is there a, maybe you can just speak to, is there a line between like, okay, surrendering and I'm going to just accept what's happening and in that becoming an abdication of responsibility?
No, like, no, no, the answer is no. No, there is no line. It's not, you're not abdicating your responsibility when you accept what's happening. Because you are clear spiritually that everything that occurs in your life occurs for a reason that provides benefit to you.
Okay, like the homework, the homeless example. Let's say someone here, they're about to get evicted, and they're like, well, I'm just going to, you know, whatever happens, happens, rather than taking action or, you know, going to get a job or reaching out, making some phone calls. They just sit on the couch and like, whatever happens, happens, I'm surrendering. Like where is that line of, okay, now is the time to like engage my will and take responsibility and go for it versus, okay, I'm going to let myself be homeless, or I'm going to let myself be sick, or I'm going to just let myself just sit here. Do you know what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying, and I'm having a little bit of a challenge with the word responsibility, because it starts to sound in my ear like duty. It's my duty.
Yes.
You know, to be to do a certain thing or to be a certain way. And I have come to understand after my conversations with God that I have no duty to anyone, not even a duty to myself.
No duty to anyone.
No. You know, one of the most powerful statements in conversations with God was this one. You owe nothing to no one, and nobody owes you anything. So I don't even if you were to loan me $100 and say, will you promise to pay it back? And I said, yes, I'll pay it back. So you gave me the $100. And then, but I've come to understand, I don't even owe you the $100. The reason I would give you the money is not because I owe it to you, but because that's who I am, because I'm making a decision to be who I am. Every act is an act of self-definition, not an act of responsibility, not a duty, an opportunity. And there's a huge difference in my life between responsibility or duty and opportunity. Every moment in my life, everything I'm confronted with of any kind, any situation or circumstance, is an opportunity for me to decide, to declare, to express, and to fulfill who I imagine myself to be. You know, my father would ask me from the time I was 13 years old, from the time I was 13 until I left the house at 18, he kept on asking me the same question. Who do you think you are anyway? But he didn't realize he was asking the most fundamental spiritual question of all time. Who do you think you are? And everything you say and think and do is an announcement of who you think you are. So I've given up doing things because I think it's my responsibility, even my responsibility to myself. I don't think, well, I have a responsibility to myself. I need to get myself in gear and go out and try to find a job. And I need to do this. And I need to do that. No, I don't need to do anything. I don't need to do any of that. And by the way, I'm not a bad person. If I don't do any of that, that's society has made that up.
Right.
It's a fiction. I'm not a bad person if I decide to live on the street and never do anything.
Okay. Help us understand this. Like, what if I just I take a loan from a bank. They give me $1 million. I'm like, well, Neil said I don't have a responsibility to pay them back. So it's not right or wrong. God doesn't judge me.
That's correct.
So clearly God doesn't judge me, but they've loaned me the money. I've taken it. I've used it. And I'm like, screw it. I'm not going to pay them back. There's no responsibility to pay them back? Like, how do we navigate through life then? You know?
If we think we're doing things because we have to.
Yes.
Then we're going to get into resentment or anger or frustration or some negative emotion. We're even going to resent having to pay the money back.
Right.
See, we have to create a new reason for doing anything. The reason for doing something is not because society says we must. Although I have to tell you that if somebody loaned me $1 million and I refused to pay even a nickel of it back, I'm sure the law would come after me pretty soon.
Yeah.
He'd be going after it. And so then the question is, do I want to go through a trial? Do I want to go to jail? Do I want to be, you know, do I want to, is this how I want my culture, my society to treat me as a person who doesn't keep his promises? Mm-hmm. So it all comes back on me. If I don't mind going to jail, if I don't care what you think about me, then I won't pay you back. And don't expect it. And I'll go to jail and I'll get 3 meals a day and a warm bed for free. And I'll have the state take care of me for the rest of my life because I really don't care. But of course, at the end of my life, I might be lying there on the pillow wondering, was that really how I wanted to experience myself in this life? Sooner or later, Newt, all of us look at ourselves in the mirror, sooner or later, whether we're 20, 50, 60, or 80, the day comes when we look in the mirror and say, is this who I really am? Is this what it really meant to be alive? What was this all about? And who am I anyway? So I don't think that we should be paying loans back or doing, you know, doing or being kind and good to people or keeping our promises because we said we would. I think we do it because we choose our life to be a demonstration to ourselves and to all others who might be witnessing it, who we really are. That's the motivation, because there's only one reason to be alive. See, we have to ask ourselves a larger question. The larger question behind the question you asked is, what's my reason even for being alive?
Yes.
What am I doing here? And how does the smaller question, should I be responsible for myself or should I be responsible to others who have done nice things for me? That's a smaller question. That falls under the larger question of who am I and why am I here? See there are really only four fundamental questions of life. Who am I? Where am I? Why am I where I am? And what do I intend to do about that? Now, Newt, each of us has to make a decision. Really, who am I? Let's look at it closely. Who am I? Am I just a physical entity, like a bird in the sky or a fish in the sea? Just another life form? Happen to be human, but that's it? You know, I live, I die, and that's the beginning and the end of it? Or is it possible, just possible, that I'm more than that? Is it possible that I'm a spiritual being, having a body and having a mind? But what if this is not who I am? What if this is just something I have? So if I'm a spiritual entity, now my raison d'etre, my reason for being, changes completely. If I really think I'm a spiritual entity, what am I doing in the physical world?
Right.
Oh, I know what I'm doing. I was told when I was 12, I got it. I'm here to get the girl, get the guy, get the car, get the job, get the better job, get the better car, get the better. That's why I'm here. I'm supposed to get my name on the door, you know, on the office door, my name on the building. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm here. I'm here to. But what if you get all those things and you're still acting like a complete schlemiel? Then what? So sooner or later, all of us ask ourselves, what am I doing here? What was the point of all of this? What is the point? And the sooner we ask ourselves that question, if I'm a spiritual entity, what am I doing here in the physical realm? Oh, I see. I've come to the physical realm so that I can demonstrate through the expression thereof who I really am. That who I am is, dare I say it, an individuation of divinity. Wow. I'm an individuation of divinity. And if I claim that definition of myself, now some people, when I say that, they think I'm incredibly arrogant. I've had a guy in an audience once say, you're trying to tell me that you think you're God. I said, wait a minute, relax. I didn't say I was God. I said, I'm an individuation of divinity. I am to God as a wave is to the ocean.
Yeah,
I said to this guy, hey, listen, is the wave separate from the ocean? Is the wave other than the ocean?
Yeah.
Or is the wave simply an arising of the ocean, powerful and beautiful and dynamic? And when it finishes its expression, when its expression is complete, it recedes back into the ocean. Ah, that's who I am. I am an arising of divinity in this particular form. And if I really assume that that's true, by the way, all people who have assumed that that's true have lived blessed lives.
Right.
They've lived lives that we talk about centuries later. We're still talking about them.
Yeah.
because that's how they live their lives. So when we live our life for that reason, that becomes why we pay back the guy who gave us $1 million. Not because we have to, not because it's our responsibility, but because that's who we are. And we don't choose to be a person who is irresponsible to himself or to others. So it's a whole different ethic.
Yeah, yeah.
It creates a different ethical foundation for human behavior. Yeah, by the way, it happens to be a foundation that every spiritual teacher throughout history has been encouraging us to embrace.
Yeah, it becomes less about like what's right and what's wrong.
No, there's no such thing as right and wrong.
Could you speak about that?
Like, sure, conversation with God says.
Right and wrong, because people might look at the world and go, what about child abuse, sex trafficking? Like, what do you mean right and wrong? Neil, break it down.
Does the person who is abusing the child think he's doing wrong?
I think the person who abuses the child sometimes might have this feeling of I'm doing wrong.
Yes, sometimes they might, and sometimes they might not. But there's conversations with God told me there's no such thing as right and wrong. There is only what works and what does not work, given what it is you're trying to do. But our ideas about what's right and wrong are what's killing us. There's only what works or what does not work, given what it is we're trying to do. Einstein put it perfectly. He said, you can't solve any problem using the energy that created it. You're not going to solve violence with violence. You're not going to bring an end to anger with anger. You cannot use the same energy that created the problem to solve the problem. So nobody does anything inappropriate given their model of the world. Conversations with God, Book 2. Nobody does anything inappropriate given their model of the world.
Right, right.
So our opportunity is to change the model of the world that is being embraced by the largest number of people. And the biggest change we need to make in the model of the world is the idea that most people hold that we're separate from each other.
Yes.
Most people hold the model of the world that says that everything is separate from everything else. We live in what I call a separation cosmology. I'm separate from God. I'm separate from you. I'm separate even from, in the largest sense, from life, in the sense that I don't have any control over it. I'm just watching it, but I can't control it. And I'm even separate in some ways from myself. I even have, you know, so we live in a separation cosmology, which produces a separation psychology, which produces a separation sociology. We join together in groups to stop ourselves from feeling separate. So we join the political parties, we become a Democrat, or I can't say the word. We join organizations and religions in order to stop ourselves from feeling separate. Because our separation cosmology inevitably produces a separation pathology, pathological behaviors of self-destruction that have been demonstrated across the span of human history. We've had armed conflict on this planet for 92% of recorded history. What is it that we don't understand? Clearly, there's something we don't understand here.
Yeah.
It's not that we have a responsibility to others. That's not what we don't understand. What we don't understand is who we really are and why we're really here. People who understand that behave in ways that demonstrate their awareness of it. And those people move through the world in such a way that they change the world. I asked God in my conversation with God, Newt, I said, okay, give it to me in one sentence. Don't give me like 29 books worth. Just give it to me in one sentence. What does it take to make life work?
Yes, what does it take?
God said, oh, Neil, it's really very simple, sweetheart. It's so simple. You think your life is about you. And your life has nothing to do with you. Your life is about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. And when you understand that, you will experience that in the largest sense, your life is about you. Because guess what? There's nobody else out there but you. We are all one.
Beautiful. Sitting with that, Neil. What, how can we, what can we do to get a deeper access into that oneness? Is there, what advice do you have? Because so much of life seems separate. So folks listening in, they might hear this, okay, we're one. We intellectually get it, but like, let's say, well, I don't feel it. I don't feel it. I mean, I understand it, but I don't feel it. And so,
well, what I do is I look back. Most people at least once in their life, and most people more than once in their life, have actually felt a sense of unity with another. Maybe it's when we're in love.
Yeah.
Maybe it's when we see somebody suffering, really, really in deep suffering, and we just feel, we're just like, oh my God, no, I can't let that happen. You know, or whatever. We almost all of us have had at least one experience in our life, and many of us more than one, where we really feel not just a connection with the other, but a sense of unity with another, a sense of oneness, where we relate to their experience so deeply that their experience might as well be our own. And I've had that experience, I know, in my life. And so what I do in order to experience myself now being one is when I have any kind of interaction with another person at all, like this interview, or maybe somebody's being mean to me. I've had a loaded gun pulled on me twice in my life, two different times. And that's a scary situation. I had a guy pull a gun on me and point it right at my face. And I understood why, because I was having an affair with his wife. And it's not a joke. It actually happened. I was like 26. What do I know? I think I'm, you know, and he caught me. He comes into the house and there I am with his wife. And he pulls out a gun. She says, oh my God. You know, I said, he's got a gun? She says, yeah, he's a detective. He's got a gun. And he pulls the gun out. And he says, I hope you enjoyed these last moments of your life with my wife. You know, and I knew what it was like to have my whole life flash before me right then and there. And I was, whoa, it's all going to end right here. You know, and I looked at her. I said, yeah, you weren't that good. There was a little joke. You're supposed to smile at that. It was a joke. Well, don't you hate it, Jim, when you have to explain the jokes to the guy who's doing it? But this actually did happen in my life. Why did I bring that up just now? I forgot why I brought all those examples up. What was the question you asked me?
Well, I was so engrossed in your story that I just, you know, I was right there. I was right there with you with the guy. I was wondering. Like, shit, how did it end? Like you're still alive.
I can tell you how it ended. I looked at the guy and I said, you know what? You have every right to be murderously angry with me. I totally get it. I've committed the cardinal sin. And you're totally right. But here's what's going to happen. I'm going to slowly and just quietly walk out of here. I'm going to walk out the front door. I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to drive away. And you'll never see me again for the rest of your life. Mm. And as I walk out of here, you have a choice. You can shoot me in the back, or you cannot shoot me in the back. But the one choice I'm not going to give you is I'm not going to give you the chance to shoot me to my face. If you're going to kill me, you're going to shoot me in the back. And with that, I simply walked past him, right out the door, my heart thumping so much I could feel it bursting out of my chest. I got in my car, no fast moves, no quick moves. I didn't even drive away fast. I just drove slowly away until I got about two blocks away. And then I hit the accelerator and got the hell out of there.
You took off.
And, you know, but that's how that event ended.
So we were talking about, you know, how we can experience that oneness, that sense of oneness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me, because I lost the thread. How I experience this sense of oneness is when I look at another person and experience in them what I've experienced in me. When I really realize that no one really, even people who do things that I think are terrible, has ever done anything that in some way or another I haven't done. Maybe I've never really killed anybody, but I've certainly, you know, killed their spirit. And I've had the same kind of energetic. So what I do when I see another person and when they're behaving in a certain way, especially if they're behaving in a way that I don't agree with, I immediately go back to a time. I think, was there ever a time when I have done something that carried the same energy that they're carrying right now? And by the way, as life would happen, because life happens to be circular, I did have that happen to me with regard to a lady that I was with. She was having a relationship with another guy. And I found out about it. And I confronted her with it. And she said, I know, you're probably so mad at me, you're ready to kill me. You know, she said, and I said, no, actually, been there, done that. Huh. I'm not making it right. I'm not agreeing with it. I'm not glad I did it. And I'm not glad you did it. But I understand it. And understanding replaces forgiveness in the mind of the master.
Understanding replaces forgiveness.
In the mind of the master. Write that on your bathroom mirror. Understanding replaces forgiveness in the mind of the master. Which is why God will never forgive us for anything. I really love giving talks in churches, because when I'm invited to give a talk in a church, the first thing I say is, good morning, glad to have you all here. I've come here to bring you an important message. God will never forgive you for anything. And the place goes crazy. I said, do you really think that God will forgive you for anything? How can you possibly frustrate, anger, annoy,
right,
or offend God in any way, when God needs nothing at all from you, and God understands you are to God as a two-year-old baby would be to you? You wouldn't say to a two-year-old baby who spilled milk on you, even if he did it intentionally. You wouldn't say, it's okay, sweetheart, I forgive you. Because you understand the kid's 2 years old. So understanding replaces forgiveness in the mind of the master. Forgiveness is the biggest obstacle to spiritual growth.
Whoa.
Write that on your bathroom mirror.
There's number two in like 2 seconds right there. Forgiveness is the biggest obstacle to spiritual growth. Why?
Because if you think you have to forgive someone, you have forgotten who they are. And you have forgotten who you are. You have imagined that somehow they can hurt you in some way that's in any way meaningful. But nobody can hurt your soul. Newt, if they kill me, they can't hurt me, because my life will go on forever and ever.
Yeah.
So nobody can hurt me in any way. But if I think I have to forgive someone else, I'm as much as acknowledging that I don't know who I really am. I think I really am this body.
Yes.
I think I really am this mind. But if I know who I really am, then I can look at that person and I can say, you know, I understand how you can feel that way. I don't agree with it. I wouldn't suggest doing what you did again.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to duplicate it, but I can understand it. And if I was going to be totally and completely, absolutely honest with you, I'd have to say to you that I've had those kinds of feelings myself in my own life. The kind of feeling that generated the way you just treated me, right, I've experienced in my life. So understanding replaces forgiveness in the mind of the master. And understanding is an obstacle to spiritual growth, because it stops us from seeing each other as who we really are. And it stops us from understanding God as who she really is.
So forgiveness is an obstacle to spiritual growth.
Absolutely. Which is why.
What do we do with the feelings, though, that come up? of like someone, my girlfriend, my husband is cheating on me, having an affair. And you find out, but it hurts. And okay, sure. I understand what you're speaking. We understand, okay, forgiveness. Oh, got it. No one's doing that. Okay, I've done. But on a human level, there's still pain there. So what do we do with the pain?
I wear my pain as a badge. I don't resist the pain. What you resist persists.
Okay.
What you look at disappears. That is, it dissolves. It begins to go away because you're looking right at it. So when I feel the pain of something like that, I wear my pain, metaphorically speaking, as a badge. You know, the pain I'm feeling is an announcement, both to me and to you, of how much I love you. If I didn't give a damn, if I didn't love you at all, it wouldn't bother me at all. Do whatever you want to do. Doesn't matter to me. But we made a special promise to each other on the day we were married. And yeah, it hurts me. I'm not going to sit here and pretend it doesn't hurt me. But if I didn't care about you, okay. See? So I wear my pain as a badge, and that allows me to endure it, to even be proud of it. I'm proud of my pain, as long as I don't act it out in a way that's hurtful or damaging to another.
Right.
But I'm proud of my pain because my pain tells me something about who I really am.
What does the pain tell you about who you are?
That I'm a loving, caring, compassionate, aware, alive human being, that I know how to love, that I haven't abandoned myself.
Can you use final question
then? Let me ask you one question before you ask me a final question. Have you ever forgiven something? Have you ever forgiven anybody anything that you really felt deeply about, but you just said, okay, it's okay, we're okay, I can let it go? Have you ever done that in your life?
Yeah.
How did you feel about yourself after you did that? How did you feel about yourself?
I felt freer. I felt happier.
Yeah. You know, and I bet you even felt good about yourself.
I felt good, for sure. I felt like I was, you know, I felt great about myself. In that moment.
And that's exactly why we would do anything. God says, do whatever it takes to feel wonderful about yourself, so long as it doesn't hurt or damage anybody else. It's okay. Because when we do and say and think things that make us feel wonderful about ourselves, we are then on the verge of reflecting and mirroring who and what divinity is.
Do whatever it takes to feel good about yourself, so long as you're not hurting anyone. So, before the final question, sub-final question is, is there any destiny? Is there like destiny, karma? Like, can we just do anything? Or is, because some people say, well, I just feel like it's just my karma in this lifetime to be this way or to experience this thing.
That's what I call a new age bypass.
Right. So can you just speak about that?
Sure.
Is there any sense of destiny? Like, I went to my astrologer and here's what he said.
No. If destiny were true, that is, if the future held events over which we have no control, then God's promise that we have free choice would be a lie. But God has promised all of us that we have free will and free choice in terms of how we don't have free will about the events that are going to occur, but we do have total free will about how we choose to experience and respond to those events. That's where free will comes in. And so for us to say, well, it's just my karma. It's just, you know, a way of giving ourselves a pass.
Yeah, an abdication.
Yeah, but karma, God told me in conversations with God, karma does not exist the way human beings imagine it to. Karma does not exist. There's no such thing as paying back in this lifetime for something you did three lifetimes ago, and now you got to pay somebody back, or you have to pay back some kind of a karmic debt. No, karma does not exist. All that exists is opportunity for us to announce and declare, express and fulfill become and experience the grandest thought we ever had about who we really are. And I have a pretty grand thought about who I am. I think I'm a wise, insightful, incisive, compassionate, caring, patient, understanding, and loving human being.
Let's add humorous to that, by the way.
I'm also humble. I'm very humble. You'll never catch me bragging about anything.
Told you. You're hilarious, man. You really are. I didn't know you were this kind of, I didn't know you had this kind of humor, Neil. I really didn't. But now I know. So listen, I really have loved the conversation. I think you've given me, you've given us a lot to think about in so many ways to expand our perceptions on life and reality and ourselves. Could you just speak to, finally, the times that we're in? We're in interesting times. For those that might feel confused with the times that we're in, uncertain about life, the future, scared, what can you say that might help us have some understanding of what we're going through right now as a humanity?
First of all, I would say, well, there are several things I would say. Number one, by the way, I wrote a book about this called The Storm Before the Calm. Everyone talks about the calm before the storm. I talk about the storm before the calm. I say in that book that we're going through the storm right now.
Yes.
And that book was written several years ago. But even then I was writing, we're going through the storm before the calm. So what I would say to people about this is that this is all part of a larger process of our evolution, our expansion, and our growth as a civilization, as a species called human beings. And it's perfectly natural and perfectly normal for us to be apprehensive, to wonder what's going on, to even be a little scared. It's perfectly normal for us to do that. But what I would say with them, to them about fear or being scared is, nobody is scared who doesn't have a need or an expectation that things will turn out a certain way. When you don't require life to show up in a certain way, you wouldn't have fear about anything. So it's difficult to cause a person who doesn't have any requirement about how life is supposed to be for them to be scared. It's difficult to find a person to be scared about that, because it's, you know, spiritual masters understand that life is all change is change for the better. As which I was told in my conversation, all change is change for the better, in the sense that every event in our life assists us individually and as a society, as a culture, as a species. All events assist us in moving forward to the next level in the evolution of our soul and, in fact, of our species. That doesn't mean we condone it, we agree with it, doesn't mean we want it to go on. It doesn't mean that we fail to try to change it, but it does mean that we do so with peace and love, as Gandhi pointed out, as Martin Luther King said as well. People who understood this demonstrated the most serene and peaceful way to encounter exterior events with which we did not agree and which might have even frightened other people. You know, I love Martin Luther King's wonderful speech, I Have a Dream. And he stood up there in front of the Washington Monument and he gave the speech of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because he refused to lose touch with the dream that he held. A larger idea about all of us, blacks and whites, gays and straights, men and women, Democrats, and he had a bigger idea about all of us. And he held on to that idea. Now, you know what? We kill people like that. when a person is like that, we just take a gun out or a knife and we kill them. Happened to Gandhi. Happened to Martin Luther King Jr. Happened to people who, because we can't stand having them around us, we don't know what to do with that. We don't know what to do with that. What do we do with a person who walks around the street saying, bless, bless, bless your enemies. And pray for those who persecute you. And if a man slaps you on the right cheek, turn and offer him your left. And if a man steals your coat, give him your shirt as well. And if a man forces you to walk 1 mile with him, go with him too. And raise not your fist to heaven, and curse the darkness not, but be a light unto the darkness, that you might know who you really are, and that all those whose lives you touch might know who they really are as well. Note, it's really quite simple. There's no mystery here. I have a kind of a motto that I use in my life. It's my mantra, my personal mantra. Whenever I meet anybody for the first time that day, I don't mean maybe the first time in my life, although it could be, but whenever I see anybody for the first time that day, maybe it's the lady across the pillow, maybe it's my neighbor across the street, maybe it's somebody across town or somebody around the world. The first thing I think to myself is, by the way, I don't do it out loud. I don't say this out loud because nobody would understand it. But I say it in my mind. I have come that you may have life and that you may have it more abundantly. Your life will be made better today for my having passed through it. I promise you. I say that in my mind when I see my wife for the first time in the morning. Your life will be made better today from my having passed through it. I promise you. I say that to the neighbor across the street, to the lady at the Starbucks, to the guy around the world. Your life will be made better today from my having been a part of it. I promise you. It's really quite simple. There's no mystery here.
Thank you.
I could, of course, be wrong about all of this. But I don't think so.
Appreciate you sharing so much, so generously today. Appreciate you for coming on to the Surrender Summit, being a part. Means a lot to me. Thank you so much.
I'm glad.
What's the best way people can just connect to you and your work? The best website is Neil Donald Walsh.
Yeah, they can either do that or they can just go to CWG, which is for, you know, stands for Conversations with God. They can go to CWGConnect.com.
Beautiful.
We'll CWGConnect.com.
We'll put all of that on the event page, folks. Make sure you connect with Neil's work. If you haven't read Conversations with God, make sure you do. Neil, thank you again. Really appreciate you for saying yes and coming on. I read your book when I was when I went to the Bodhi Tree at the age of 19, and your book basically fell off and really changed my life at that moment. So you've been a part of my evolution and my journey, and I really appreciate you. Thank you for coming on to the Surrender Summit.
Those are nice things to hear. Thank you. Thank you for saying that.
Folks, it's been an amazing interview, amazing session with Neil Donald Walsh. I still think you're amazing, by the way, Neil. And if even if it's a lie, I'm going to keep telling that lie. and so, folks, I hope you all, you've received this interview with an open heart. Take a moment to digest it. Some Neil has dropped some deep gems and some soul bombs, hopefully to expand your heart into a bigger capacity. And hopefully you're also more inspired to live surrender in your life in some way. an authentic way that is unique to you. Make sure you let your friends know about the Surrender Summit. There's still time to listen to some replays, www.thesurrendersummit.com. And keep shining. Love now. See you in our next session.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Soul Talk, please do share the podcast with all of your friends. Let everyone know and make sure you download Soul Talk today. I'm looking forward to next week where I'll get to share more inspiration with you. Meanwhile, follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or social media. You can find out more about my work at www.coopblackson.com. If you feel ready to take your life to the next level, join me at my exclusive event in Bali, www.boundlessblissbali.com. where you can find out more and apply. Also, make sure to remember to download my free 2-part video training series and learn the ultimate secrets to happiness and fulfillment at coopblackson.com. Sending you all big hugs and love now.